Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. You are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. Looks like we might be having some technical issues. Our guest today is trying to call in, and he's messaging me saying he's having some issues. And I actually have not heard from Matthew yet, so fingers crossed everyone calls in. But again, thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path. And lovely. I just realized I was on mute. Sorry about that, everybody. But you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. I am Michael Graywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate of the Unnamed Path. Walking the Unnamed Path is a podcast where we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors of men who love men and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. You know, I'm glad you've decided to join us today. Hopefully I can get everything sorted out. We have our guest today, our brother David Shorey, is trying to call in. Not sure why he's not able to call in. I'm going to play us a song while I try to get everything figured out. And then hopefully once I get it figured out, we can come back on and, you know, have a nice little conversation. So I'm going to play a new song from S.J. Tucker called Burn Me Out, which is featured in a new project she's been working with called Strowlers from Zombie Orpheus Entertainment. Hope you enjoy.
Turn this world.
And that was S.J. Tucker, Firebird's Child, that we just heard. And before that, that was S.J. Tucker, Burn Me Out, from a new release from her that we featured on Pagan's Night Radio earlier in the week. And, oh my God, everything's working now. I don't have to sacrifice a goat. I don't know
what
all
those
going
poor
on.
Goats.
Well, hey, you know, I could use this.
That was a great song, though. I love that Firebird song. I was getting down and twirling and spinning and dancing in the middle of the living room. It was great.
Yes, it's one of my favorite songs of hers. But, oh my gosh, that must be my fabulous co-host, Matthew Sidney. Is it?
Yes, I'm here. My name's Matthew Sidney, and my pants are falling off. Only because I was dancing. I started getting ecstatic dance. The next thing you know, they're just sliding down. So I was having a mild garment malfunction.
Oh, my. Well, let's go ahead and, redo our opening a little bit. Thank you all, everyone, for tuning in. You are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. On this podcast, we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on various topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. If you want to join the show, to call in, but that was the issue we were having, but hopefully, maybe it's working, maybe it's not. I had to call everyone in. but you can always, hit us up on email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at walking_theup. And again, there's always Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. How have you been, Matthew? Besides the craziness, trying to get into the show today.
I've been well. It's been a good 2 weeks, and I'm excited because I'm about to start my first class as an unnamed path teacher, and that's actually happening today, shortly after the show.
Ooh.
And so it's scary and exciting and a little humbling, but there's some really great students, and so I'm excited. I think it's a good season for new beginnings, and this is going to be an amazing journey, and I know I'm going to learn a lot from them.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Today's show, we are doing a bit of a recap. What was it? Back in December, we had our new brother, Buck Arguios, on to talk about Roots and Bones, which was held in Australia this year on January 13th. Now, it was a one-day event with classes and workshops and featured presenters that talked about a variety of gay and queer inclusive pagan traditions. Now, two of the featured presenters were actually two of our own brothers, our brother David Shorey and Tommy Starchild, who are both going to be on the show today. We have them waiting in the green room, anticipating coming on. But I'm very excited to hear about how this event went. It was the first time that it happened, and hopefully they'll have many more. Let's go ahead and bring Tommy and David on. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So I guess
hi,
we found out that the secret for this podcast, this broadcast to work, is for Matthew to take off his clothes.
I guess.
Whatever the gods demand. Just don't ask me to jump into a live volcano.
It's all about sacrifice, Matthew. It's all about sacrifice.
whatever the gods ask.
Right.
Well, Tommy and David, you both were presenters at Roots and Bones. Why don't you tell us what it was you were presenting? We'll start with Tommy, and then we'll do David.
Okay. So I'm Tommy Starchild, just in case David and I sound alike. And at Roots and Bones, I actually revived a workshop that was originally written for the very first Stone and Sting. And the workshop is titled The Warrior and the Healer. And it's a workshop. It's actually the first workshop I have ever put together originally specifically for a gay male or queer male audience. And it's looking at the two archetypes of the warrior and the healer, but taking an in-depth look at what these are, what these some mythos around them, in order to really move away from archetypes as these things to strive toward, but what are we learning from these as men, and what is the bridge between these two?
Very cool.
And
now about how many?
David?
Oh,
go ahead, Matthew.
Go ahead, Matthew.
I was just going to ask, how many people did you have in your workshop?
I believe there were about 25, maybe 26 in attendance.
Oh wow, that's nice.
Yeah, it was a full room and very nice for the first Roots and Bones. And an amazing group of men at the Queer Pagan Men Australia.
Yeah, and this is David. I did a workshop that was called Climbing Trees and Tending Fires. And basically it was an introduction to some of the material of the Unnamed Path. And we specifically did a journey work to meet the ancestors of men who love men. And we did a treading the mill and then went to the underworld and went to places where the ancestors of men who love men reside. And had some opportunity for those who were present to engage with maybe an ancestor that could step forward for them, or just to get a sense of what this experience is like. And while I wanted to make it visceral, I wanted to make it something that wasn't just a guided meditation. So I wanted, so I did have the treading of the mill and was really focused on an experiential activity versus just a heady activity.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. What was your, how many people did you have attend that workshop?
Well, the great thing about Roots and Bones was that it was, since it was a we did our presentation, it was kind of this continuous flow. So it was an all-day activity that we just went from one to one to one. So it was the same amount of folks who were having the experience. So it started off with Tommy talking. No, me. Was it me?
It was you.
I can't remember. It was me. That's right. So it started off with me, and then it went into Tommy, and then it went into Fio, who was also presenting as well. And we had lunch in the middle. So it was kind of this great all-day immersive experience for the folks who were in attendance. One of the other things that had happened is the night before, Fio had done a ritual, ancestral ritual, Sabbat ritual, was very, very, it was very awesome to engage in that energy and to start the weekend off with that. And then from the following day was the Midsummer Festival, which a lot of the participants who were there for the weekend, we all kind of went together. So it was a very immersive, collective, community, witchy pagan-y spiritual experience for the entire weekend.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both attended...
Yeah, I thought we were just doing the intros.
No.
I did a teaser.
No, David and Tommy, and well, even Matthew, you, all of y'all have attended PantheaCon. I know Matthew didn't know about that. You know, you've attended PantheaCon and presented at PantheaCon, which is another much larger event. I think Tommy just got back from PantheaCon.
That's correct.
You know, would you say Roots and Bones is like a, you know, was it like a very beginner type of PantheaCon? Had it kind of a similar feel or something?
I wouldn't necessarily compare the two. I would compare Roots and Bones more to Stone and Sing, because it was an event hosted by Queer Pagan Men of Australia, and it was focused on queer pagan men in attendance. So it had a much more defined group that it was focusing on, as well as for the workshops and things that were being presented, much in the same way that Stone and Sting is focused on men who love men. The Queer Pagan Men Australia work with much the same philosophy as the Unnamed Path, as far as male identified, however it is that you identify male that day, and you know, queer, whatever queer means to you, in participation. So it was more intimate. PantheaCon can get between 2,000 and 3,000 people in attendance, with multiple workshops going on in all the time slots. And this was much more focused and fine-tuned with the attendance just present for one workshop, followed by the other and the other.
Okay. You had a question, Matthew. I know you did.
Well, I thought I would actually...
You know,
this is Tommy Starchild. Since I just did a teaser, I thought maybe I would give a little bit more of what the Warrior and the Healer is focusing on.
Oh, yeah.
Because when I originally wrote it, I was not an initiate in the Unnamed Path. And so it was written from my work through Anderson Ferry as an initiative fairy, and looking to bring something that was more focused on men who love men. And in Anderson Ferry, we work with the Divine Twins, and in particular the ones that have called to me, referred to as the Red God and Green God. And so it's the story of creation as it relates to the Divine Twins, the emergence of the Divine Twins, and then the sexual interplay and the sexual creation that results from and sexual union of the Red God and Green God. So weaving in a tale of creation that is not from a polarity perspective, but is from a ecstatic place, from that place of ecstasy.
Very cool. I don't know much about Anderson Ferry. I know do we have multiple other brothers who practice it? I believe we do.
I believe
yes.
So. Or at least who are studying it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy, I have a question. This is a workshop that you've done more than once, right?
That's correct.
And has it evolved since the first time you gave this workshop?
I would say it's evolved every time I've given the workshop. When it was originally created, my fairy companion Sims took over, as well as Danagloss, the blue god in Anderson Fairy, also just kind of took over and began to really write it. While I started to do an outline, and before I knew it, I was needing to write an essay and just write down as I was exactly how I was receiving it. And so there is a consistency in that, because every time that I deliver this workshop, I do want to read from it so that I can really capture the words that were being given. But it also has been spirit-driven, based on the attendance, who's there present, and sort of what needs are being called out from those that are in attendance. So it really takes on a life of its own each time that it's been presented, and focuses on somewhat different aspects, or different mysteries kind of get pulled out of it.
And I have a question for, I'm interested in hearing from both of you, David and Tommy. Other than your own workshops, what was something that was a standout activity or workshop that you experienced at this Roots and Bones?
This is David. It's interesting because the experience of the weekend was kind of cradled between an experience of Tommy and I and our partner Virgil being in Australia for the first time and having the opportunity to see different parts of the country. And so I think for me, I've heard and attended Tommy's workshops before, but every time I hear him talk, I get something out of it. And it was also very interesting to see, because the only times that Tommy has done the workshop has been in a U.S.-based audience, or mostly U.S.-based audience, and to see the cultural dynamic and interplay from that workshop being done with another country and a different culture and different perspective, worldview. So I think I learned a lot out of that experience. I got to know Fio did a workshop about Dionysus, which is a deity who I know of, but I don't know much about. And so learning more about him was good. And whenever I give a workshop, I always learn stuff about myself and about the experience. And so having the dialogue between the attendees about asking questions about the unnamed path and challenging, not in a combative way, but challenging statements that I made and basis of where the tradition comes from and how it focuses itself. Allowed for me to not only engage in the conversation, but also expand my appreciation and my understanding of what the Unnamed Path is about.
And Tommy, what was one of the standout experiences for you?
Well, we went there originally. Well, I mean, part of it was to initiate Buck into the Unnamed Path. So this was also bringing the Unnamed Path to another continent. So that was pretty moving. And then taking the workshop to folks outside the country and another continent that some of them were just being exposed to it for the first time. Some had been listening to the podcast, but this was their first encounter to really engage with someone to inquire about some particulars. The ritual that Theo Santika, or also known as Gede Parma, had done on the Friday night was really intense, calling in the Lord of Light. And just the primal nature of working with these men and really tapping into the land that we were on and the space that we were in. That was pretty intense for me, and an opportunity to really let myself go and allow the work that I do to really come through and lend those energies to that working.
Now, Tommy and David, both of you are involved in helping to organize Stone and Stang, which is happening the first weekend of October this year in California, once again in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And how has your experience with Roots and Bones, how is that influencing your approach to this year's Stone and Stang?
Well, this is David. I would say that one of the focuses that we really want to have for this year's Stone and Stang is having experiential activities that there's so often we go to things and they're wonderfully done on the history and the even the some of the explanations of why things are done, but you don't get to really experience those. And so one of the great things about the Roots and Bones was that there were experiential activities, and I think that having those really helps attendees get that feeling of, it's one thing to learn about it intellectually, but then when you physically do it, you can feel what's going on, and that helps inform you to say, okay, I don't feel so intimidated by doing this because I've already done it. Now I can just build on what I did there and grow from it.
And for me, I think knowing that we're building a larger network, the brothers are doing in the Unnamed Path is something that is reaching beyond the network that we've been accustomed to. So, it's easy in your own country to, at least for me, to get somewhat of an insular perspective. I mean, obviously America is a large country, many states, and we get kind of swept into what is our own culture. But the Unnamed Path has really tapped into something that is bigger. That's always been woven into it as we do, dip into our capacity to love and allow that fifth chamber of our heart to resonate out and touch all men who love men. Well, that really is going around the world and touching men on in other countries, on other continents. And so a big thing for me in focusing on Stone and Stang is how can we expand that, at least in an energetic quality, as David said, doing some more experiential workings, coming together and doing more primal ritual. To really sink our spirits down into the depths of the work that we're doing, not just as not just in the Unnamed Path, but in as men who work and walk in the alternate routes, the different paths, whether they be paths of magic or some type of shamanic practice or just energy working and healing, even if sometimes we get folks that will wander in and their backgrounds are just coming from a healing background as they're awakening to deeper gifts and things. So I think looking at this particular stone and staying and the gorgeous land that we'll be hosting this on up in the Redwoods, and knowing that the spirits that they offer there should really be a wonderful, intense opportunity to spin together as brothers in ritual.
And you mentioned culture and American culture and the experience of connecting with the community in Australia. And I'm curious, being able to have some serious face time with members of the Tribe of Men Who Love Men in Australia, what can you tell us is might be some of the differences in culture, in their approach to this kind of work, and the flavor that they bring forth? What did you guys learn from them, and what do you think we as Americans can learn from them?
Go, Tommy.
Sure.
I always ask the hard questions.
Right.
I got to keep you on your toes.
One of the first things was just in just their language. So they chose the wording, the language of Queer Pagan Men Australia. Queer because it was a less defined term. Men, they were also being very open, and there wasn't a whole lot of drama around a concern about how an individual was defining what it meant to them personally to be man, to be male. I think at times we might find ourselves getting swept into a gender dialogue when sometimes it really is as simple as, do you identify right now as male? Do you identify as a man who loves men? Okay, welcome. not all gender identity is coming from an activist front, especially in the circles that we are trying to weave that are spiritual in nature, which creates a deeper intimacy, and it gives opportunity for folks to explore that. And it seems much more open in Australia as far as their integration of understanding of just how they were open to gender identity. But also, because the colonization and the plight of the indigenous folks in Australia is still something that's very raw and very present, the recognition of indigenous folks where ritual was taking place, honoring spirits of land where they were standing, honoring the indigenous folks of that land where they were standing, and honoring indigenous folks that were present in the ritual that would be taking place. The Aboriginal people, there's an interrelationship on some level among the tribes. They tend, and when we were reading in some of the cultural centers, there was lots of reference to families as opposed to tribes like we have here in the States. So a lot of their stories and myths were similar. They're often being somewhat integrated, close, foundational concepts in their mythos and creation stories. So the resonance of the indigenous people was something that was not possible to get away from. It was very rich and very prevalent. And David and I caught ourselves reflecting on the indigenous folks of the Americas and how we might honor in some sort of similar way, but also looking at how the tribes in the Americas had a wide variety of story, a wide variety of origin, a wide variety of relationship, and not necessarily having a unification among similar stories and similar creation stories and things. So there's a little bit of a difference. So each fine-tuning our approach and how to reach out to indigenous folks to honor, really, just to be humble and to honor not only land, but specific place where we stand, the indigenous folks that walked that place where we stand, and the indigenous folks that may be present as we do ritual.
Yeah, and this is David. I think also I learned just how easy it is to simply accept or to acknowledge the fact that there are, you know, queer people around us, and you know, the thing that popped in my mind is, and this is not, you know, standard in Australia, but in every place in Australia, but where we were at and the places we went, even the more heterosexual inclined venues had non-gendered bathrooms, and it just wasn't an issue. Or if there was a gender identified restroom, if there was, you know, a urinal and a stall, you know, there was no issue with the someone who needed to use the stall to use the stall. So it was like this kind of comfortableness of just, you know, doing what you need to do when you need to do it, that here in the States we have, you know, there's still that awkwardness around it. It's the, but in these places, it was a non-issue. And so that was really inspiring for me to see. And also, as Tommy had said about the work with the ancestors, you know, there's a lot of folks who get very much focused in on the, deities, And we forget about the ancestors, and the ancestors, you know, they're doing the ancestors, the ones we can connect with to do the minutia work. Sometimes the deities are so globally focused. It's like, oh, okay. You know, are we even on their radar? So the work with the ancestors, connection with ancestors, connection with spirits of place was really inspiring for me.
It sounds like, you know, we as Americans definitely have a lot to learn from our brothers in other parts of the world. Do you guys have any ideas for strategies of how we can create stronger connections and get closer to our brothers in other places so that we can more easily learn from each other and grow?
Send us back to Australia. Well, now the unnamed path has been brought to Australia, and you know, the internet is a very interesting thing, and time zones are even far more interesting, but at least give us an opportunity to connect and not have the old school cost lots of long-distance international phone calls. So we are actually far more connected, possibly than we're aware of, or maybe that's me, you know, quickly approaching 50, and the millennials already knew this. But we're far more connected. We're a global culture today, and I think sometimes I forget that. I think sometimes it might be easy to forget that, but we're a global culture. And there's an interesting thing. I'm gonna wander off topic slightly, and it'll connect. But David and I both have been working with the Yazidi ancient indigenous culture that have existed since several thousand BCE in northern Iraq, northern Syria, Turkey area. And the deity of the Yazidi is Melek Tau, so the peacock angel. And they have prophesied for thousands of years the return of the peacock angel, an avatar of his would return and unite the world under the rainbow flag. And when I first heard that, I was taken, because there is only one flag that is recognized globally across cultures with individuals who identify with it, and that's the rainbow flag. And so if we look at things like the unnamed path or other queer type spiritualities, such as fairy, where we are connecting on an ecstatic, interconnected relationship with men who love men, in this case. This is an identity that transcends borders, that transcends continents. There's a resonance that resonates within the spirits, the souls of all of us that we recognize. And I don't think we should take ourselves lightly to know that something was said thousands of years ago, whether they were predicting the rainbow flag that may be a sticker on some of our cars, I'm not going that far, but just the spirit of that. There's something for us to hear. There is something for us to rejoice about, that as we radiate our love out and touch and connect and interweave in a global network, we are changing things. We are absolutely changing things. Harry Hay said that the gay male experience is one that lends itself inherently to subject-subject consciousness, meaning that all gay men have the inherent capability, not all open to it, but all have the inherent capability to resonate with subject-subject consciousness, meaning all things are subject, or another way to say it, all things are equal. And this is contrary to the male-dominated patriarchal culture that is subject-object, where man, in this case, white male, is subject and everything else is object. So as we resonate this network out, what we are calling forward is what Harry Hay was talking about, that ability to see all things and each other as equal and as subjects.
Wow. And I just, I'm sorry, go ahead, David. That sounded like David.
Well, yeah, this is David. I was just going to say that one of the things, too, I wanted to just bring up was, you know, we went to Australia very soon after the parliament had legalized same-sex marriage, and after what was a very gut-wrenching experience by the GLBT community of a public, basically a public vote on whether or not they could be married, and it was a mail-in thing, and there was a lot of it was nasty. It was a very nasty campaign, but in the end, the plebiscite, the straw poll, as they were calling it, passed, and people, and then the parliament took it up and agreed to it. So the energy that was there, the energy while we were there, was very palpable in terms of a moving forward, a moving ahead. And so, you know, I talk about how some of the things were just not issues, but just to think that, you know, a few months before or a month before we were there, those same things were happening in an environment where, you know, everyone was being viewed as equal in certain environments, but when they went to want to be married, they weren't. And so, it really it formed me to appreciate how we in the States, where we are at this point, to have that connection with and having that compassion and empathy for our friends in Australia, and to also be aware of those countries around the world where they don't have that opportunity. And even more so, they don't have the opportunity to be as open and as out as we do. And so, we get so, like Tommy said, caught up in our United States myopic view, but there are people out there who still get killed for wanting to hold their lover's hand, or even, you know, acknowledge the fact that they love someone of the same sex.
That's so I was inspired to look up Subject consciousness. So this is the Wikipedia article. Subject consciousness, a concept proposed by Harry Hay, believed by Hay to be gay people's unique perspective on the world. He saw heterosexual society existing in a subject-object dynamic where men who had the culturally acceptable power saw only themselves as subjects and therefore higher than women who were treated as objects of property. Hay extrapolated this interpersonal sexual dynamic into a broader social context, believing that the subject-object relationship was the driving force behind most of all societal ills. Objectification served as the barrier emotionally, separating an individual from another individual by dehumanizing them, making them an object. When Hay looked at same-sex relationships, he saw a different dynamic. He believed that homosexual relationships were based on mutual respect and empathy for the other, a longing for a companion who is as equally valuable as the self. He termed this interpersonal dynamic subject-subject. He believed that this subject-subject way of viewing the world was gay people's most valuable contribution to the greater society. By empathizing with all people, relating to each other as equal to equal, society would change drastically and social injustices would be eradicated.
And as I would say in Radical Theory, that is the sound of the snake, and the snake being a symbol of the goddess. So, yes. So, yes, we are being called by an ancient voice that is calling us awake, calling us as queer men, as men who love men, as gay men, whatever we want to call ourselves, but we are being called to action. We are being called awake because there is a resonance, there is a gift, there is a healing that we offer to the larger society, to the world as a whole. And that offering is that ability to see all things inequality, to see as Mother Nature herself sees, in balance. And we can usher in a restoration of that balance on a cultural level. If we want to see, the Me Too movement, where does that come from? That comes from the way that our young boys are raised to view all things, including women, as objects to be objectified, to be done with as they please. If we start by understanding what I go into with the warrior and the healer, understanding how we raise our young boys, if we can raise our young boys to understand subject-subject consciousness, to respect self and recognize equality in other, then respect of other is a reflection of respect of self. And shifting that dynamic from objectification to honor and respect.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. I think to expand that, just David, to expand on that too, is that that is a focus of folks who are dealing with the indigenous communities in Australia, and there's still conflict, there's still strife, but you know, for a long time there was a subject object perspective that you know, the colonizers in Australia had for the indigenous folks in Australia, and then you know, through a period of efforts towards reconciliation and also through struggle and fighting by the indigenous folks themselves, it has gone from subject object to subject subject, with some amazing results of both spiritual cultural development. There's a lot of the communities, the indigenous communities that have, like here in the United States, been decimated by the colonizers, but at the same time there's also a visceral feeling, at least that what I had when I got there, that acknowledging the indigenous people, acknowledging their lands, acknowledging their culture, acknowledging their ritual in a way that that we don't necessarily have here in the United States. And so to see that it is possible for at least I wouldn't necessarily call it a healing, but an effort towards understanding and reconciliation is possible in the United States, because it's been happening in other countries, I think was also very inspiring for me.
Yeah. This is Tommy. You know, it is my personal belief that it was highly likely Harry Hay was one of those ancestors communicating with Eddie. And when Eddie, in the Unnamed Path, talks about our unique capacity to love, it's my belief, it is my understanding, when Eddie mentioned that unique capacity to love, was that subject-subject consciousness that Harry Hay talked about.
Going back to experience on the land in Australia, did you get a chance to go to any sites that were, how would I put it, I guess particularly magical, or had you know, great spiritual energy there to experience?
This is David. I would say yes. It's called the continent of Australia.
that was going to be my answer.
You know, it's interesting because there were so many. We had a couple of opportunities to go to indigenous, and I want to just have a brief explanation why I keep on saying indigenous and not, and I'll just say the word once, aboriginal, that the A word is actually a word that was used and has been used by the colonizers for Australia. And so it's actually a pejorative. It's been applied to them. And so to use that word also connects back with that energy of oppression and energy of taking away the land. So using the word indigenous, meaning people of the land, people native to that space, is a preferred word. And it just, after hearing that, that makes sense. But yeah, we did have a couple of opportunities to be on land that was sacred, and to have experiences with Indigenous folks who were very, you know, very welcoming, very open, very loving, very compassionate. The fact that we approached them in a way that was, you know, open and humble, knowing that we were on their land with their permission, in a sacred journey. I don't know, Tommy, if you want to talk about more specifics.
Sure. So this is Tommy. So when I stepped on the land, I had a very uncomfortable feeling because I didn't want to be or sound like that white guy from America. There was something in the land that was calling to me, that it felt familiar. And I didn't quite know how to express it. And so in working with Buck and his initiatory process involved an opportunity to discuss some things with a deity present. So I decided to ask while we had a deity present, so what is this that is feeling so familiar and what's resonating? And I was told to go out into the woods and find a river. It's like, okay, I think I'm feeling what this means. What is this metaphor? What is the metaphor and even somewhat literal, but what is it, you know, sitting with it? And as we were leaving, we were at the gorgeous Emerald Beach. And leaving, we're taking a slightly different route than we arrived because of some building a new highway. And something that was on along the way, and Buck felt the need to stop. And there was a mural, and I'm posting that mural right now on the Walking the Unnamed Path Facebook page. And the mural was painted by an artist, and it's an Indigenous story of creation. And it shows the rainbow serpent, who's the spirit of the earth, and also is said to have created the river. And this mural was painted on the side of a building alongside a very large river that we had been driving by, that we had not quite acknowledged the fact that we were driving alongside this very large river. So the sacredness of the land there and the talkative nature, the accessibility, was something that was very apparent to me. The land had not gone quiet. And the land was speaking to whomever was listening. And so I was told to go into the woods. Well, really all it took was a road trip and to look, to notice. And then here was the story painted on the side of this building that I needed to hear. Concerning the rainbow serpent and the resonance that spoke to me about. So yeah, there was many, many sacred places that just felt sacred, that were called to be sacred, that were historically sacred. But there was even a quartz vein on this little peninsula out in Cuffs Harbor that I took my shoes off and stood on this quartz vein. And ask, what is this about this land that feels so familiar? And the chatter, the talk, the communication that arrived so freely. At one point I had an additional dialogue that was mine going on in my head, like, I can't believe this is, you know, so clear and so much dialogue as the dialogue of listening to the land was taking place. And so the land is very alive, and it made me realize that even though I had stepped foot on another continent and that was my first time, land is land, this earth is the earth, and connecting to the spirits of land, they're not trapped by borders of countries and things. They're not separated by oceans. That when we allow ourselves to reach into the land, we can find a resonance that feels similar because our feet have always touched land.
I just want to tune in. I apologize to our listeners that the call-in line is still not working. I do know that there are folks who have tried to call in. I do have a message from Buck. He sends his love to all three of you guys. And he also says that Queer Pagan Men of Australia will never be the same after the wonderful adventure with you down under. And so thank you, Buck, for being able to tune in. And I apologize for our technical difficulties today. This is so exciting to be alive at this time. And, you know, for good or for ill, this technology is bringing us closer together. And despite the bumps in the road, despite difficult issues that are cropping up here in the United States and other places, I really believe that we're going to come through this globally in a much more healed position as a society, as a people, than we were before. And I think that what you guys are doing as ambassadors for our community to the other part of the world is an essential part of that healing.
Yeah, this is David. Every day that I had on that land was very special for me, and so we were definitely inspired by not only the land itself, but the people on the land, and I know that I came away changed. They do say that they, whoever they are, that when you go to a different country, your perspective on the world changes, and that certainly was true for me. I think added to that is that not only did my perspective change, but I was inspired by the people of Australia and the land to come back to the United States and continue the good fight, continue to work and teach and love and do what we as humans want to do, but sometimes our own inadequacies get in the way.
Unfortunately, you know, we're probably going to have to wrap up, gentlemen, and we started a little late, but, you know, we have gone over a little bit of time. But, you know, before we go, David and Tommy, besides Stone and Stang, do you have any other events coming up?
This is Tommy. I do. I will be co-presenting alongside Orion Foxwood at ConjureCraft that is in Santa Cruz. Pulling up the dates, April 27th through the 30th, and I'm co-presenting on Monday the 30th. That's their special extra event, and Orion and I will be presenting on Witch Blood, and it's an all-day workshop that will then culminate in the evening with a ritual connecting to the arrival of the blood and the witch blood. So that's April 27th through the 30th up in Santa Cruz, and that is hosted through Serpent's Kiss.
And this is David. To add on to what Tommy said, you can go to conjurecraft.us or just search Conjurecraft Santa Cruz in your favorite search thing online. I am focused in on Stone and Stang 2018, which will occur the first weekend in October of 2018. And I'm very, very, very excited to say that our Friday keynote speaker is going to be Andrew Raymer, the author of Two Flutes Playing, which was very inspirational for the formation of the Unnamed Path. Andrew is an elder of our community, someone who has had an incredible impact and connection with the gay spirituality movement. And so he is going to be talking about that experience and also other things as well. And so if folks are interested in attending Stone and Stang, they can get additional information at stoneandstang.com. There's also a Stone and Stang Facebook group, or Facebook page, I should say. And for those who aren't on it, the Unnamed Path Facebook group will also get posts about Stone and Stang as well. So that is my big focus for the remainder of the year.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time out to chat with us. I apologize for the bumps in the road early on. But as a IT professional once said to me, it's a miracle that any of this stuff works at all.
So very true.
Yeah. Yeah. Cordless phones still amaze me, so.
All right, guys. Cool. I love you so much.
I love you.
And thank you.
And spreading our love out to Buck in Australia.
Yeah.
Yes.
And sending our love to the Indigenous peoples of the lands in which we stand and the lands in which we love and the lands that make up this beautiful, wonderful earth. We thank you and we offer our blessings to you.
Aho.
Yeah. And, thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You've been listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. If you would like to get in touch with Matthew or myself, you can always reach us at walking_path@gmail.com or again on Twitter, walking_dup. And there is always Facebook, facebook.com/walking_path. Hope you all have a blessed weekend, and we will see y'all again in, another 2 weeks. Right. Take care, everybody.
Right, blessings.
Play. There we go.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Oh.